Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590TheFan.com. We used to share.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. Just got an email, and it has something to do with our title sponsor. Yes, Hollywood Casino tomorrow, they are going to have a groundbreaking. You know what they're going to be talking about? They're going to break ground on the Ice Center. How about that? The event will include a roundtable discussion hosted by Chris Kerber. Among the people on hand, Bernie Federico, Brett Hall, Pat Maroon, the City of Maryland Heights, the St. Louis Legacy Ice Foundation, and the St. Louis Blues will hold an event to celebrate the groundbreaking of the St. Louis Community Ice Center. That's going to be tomorrow at 9 a.m., 750 Casino Center Drive. How about a tip of the hat to the great people at Hollywood Casino, our title sponsor, for making this happen? It's going to be the best facility we've ever had in St. Louis. You know, I got to tell you, as a guy who's been covering the Blues for 25 years, I've been in some really crappy locker rooms and places where they've trained a little bit that, God bless the people at Brentwood, but there's no locker room that's ever smelled worse than that one. And then the Mills, not exactly convenient. Chesterfield was fine, but none of these have been state-of-the-art. They're all fine facilities and great people, and they did their best. But it's all about new and state-of-the-art, and that's what it's going to be at Hollywood Casino. We appreciate Todd George and their great people stepping up and making it happen. It's not just for the Blues, too. There's going to be four sheets of ice. Young kids will play hockey and learn the game for decades to come at this new facility. We are excited that Hollywood Casino is a part of this incredible endeavor. All right, if you'd like to be a part of the program, we have the First Tee text lines at 855-282-8255. We have the Maryville University listener line also at that same number. And Maryville wants to remind everybody about their Digital World program. It provides students with free iPads loaded with textbooks and more than 150 apps. The program is designed to engage students as critical thinkers and collaborative problem solvers, as well as give students the skills and confidence to keep pace with the emerging workplace technologies. You can go to maryville.edu for more information. Our game plan is Martin Kilcoyne will be in studio today at 11 o'clock, and we hope to check in with Bob Carpenter at 10:30. Tomorrow at 10:30, our special guest will be the new Cardinal manager. Mike Schilt will join us, so we're excited about that. And then we'll be broadcasting live from Soulard tomorrow also. So a lot of things going on the press box, and very shortly we'll check in with Bob Carpenter. Pausey, you were watching that game last night. Did you just have this feel that they are incapable of losing?
It's kind of one of these weird streaks because it's not – do you give credit to the manager? Do you give credit for the roster management? I think Schill is a lock right now for manager next – or for the management position next year. And why wouldn't he? Very cheap. He loves the job, and he is a great soundbite. Gives at least 30-second soundbites, and that's what you need, right, in TV?
Absolutely. That's all we care about. All right, let's welcome to the program one of the great baseball play-by-play broadcasters in the country. I love Bob Carpenter because he went to high school where my dad went, McBride. He went to college where I went, UMSL. Bob, great to be with you. How are you?
Everybody's dad went to my high school, Frank. You would not believe how much I hear. My dad went to McBride. And you know what? I still keep in touch with the high school buddies. I got in town early because ESPN took our game Sunday night in Chicago. So I came down Saturday night and got to play that wonderful track over at Gateway with some of my buddies on Sunday. So that was special.
And now, do you
so
get
good to hear you and good to be in town?
Good to be with you. And do you get together with your lovely sister a lot when you're in town?
Oh, I've seen Judy numerous times since I've been in town. And my sister Mary, we've been out to lunch. My sister Kathy's in from Texas. We've had a blast with the sisters. Debbie's here, Mrs. C. And got a couple of guys from Tulsa, some friends of mine from Virginia. Some of my Nationals friends from Virginia are here. So I've been scrambling for tickets all week, but it's a labor of love. And it's been a good couple of days, except on the scoreboard.
How many years for Judy with the Cardinals?
This is her 52nd year in the Cardinal front office.
If she wasn't such a nice...
Her official title is Director of Major League Administration. And, you know, she's had different hats she's worn over there. She got hired in 1967 to work for a gentleman by the name of Rick Current, who was the Cardinals Group Sales Director. And she was a secretary in the group sales department. Rick later left to have a really big job in 69 with the Royals when they were born up in Kansas City. And, you know, Judy stayed around. Her first general manager was Bing Devine, John Claiborne, you know, all the Dal Maxville, Whitey, Joe McDonald, all those guys. Of course, John Mozeliak, Walt Jocketty, a very distinguished group of guys, even Stan. You know, was general manager for a year, Stan the man. And so Judy's had a wonderful history across the street over there. And, yeah, her 52nd year. So I always tell people, this is my 35th year in Major League Baseball. So I tell everybody my sister and I have 87 years of baseball, but she's got about two-thirds of it.
You know, if she wasn't such a nice person, she could write a tell-all book. I mean, she knows everything. All the inner workings and all the spats and all the problems. I mean, she could really write a book.
Well, the funny thing about it is, you know, I've heard my sister referred to as the person who knows where all the bodies are buried, you know, under Old Busch Stadium and this stadium, you know, obviously in jest. But I think she once did say, Frank, she said, I could write a book about my 50 plus years with the Cardinals, but I might have to be dead before they could publish it.
Well done. I got a feeling that if you were to ask her, who's your favorite all-time Cardinal boss to work for, she would have said Walt Jocketty. You think I'm reading that right?
You know what? I think it would be a tie between Walt and Whitey. She was very close to Whitey and Mary Lou. And Joe McDonald, who was a fantastic baseball man who had been with Whitey with the Mets. You know, and she and Walt and Sue Jocketty were very close. And, you know, I was there for a lot of that time with the Cardinals and got to know Joey and, you know, the son and the daughter. And, you know, you just get to know the family and all that. But Whitey was just fantastic. He treated Judy like family. Tony treated Judy like family. And Walt did the same thing, and Joe McDonald. I mean, those were true gentlemen. And I think she's had good relationships with all the guys. You know, she and Maxie were together for quite a while. But I think maybe if you would ask her who was the – you know, it's just really hard, Frank, to differentiate. But maybe – and this is a different era because general managers were different back then than they are now. You know, I know she has a tender spot in her heart for the late, great – Bing Devine and his wife Mary, you know, and you know, because Bing was her first GM, and back then you never saw a general manager on the field, you never saw a general manager in the clubhouse, or for that matter, in front of the cameras very much. It was just a different time in baseball. But I tell you, I think she got the Good Guy Award several years ago from the Baseball Writers, and I think she called all of those guys she worked for her League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or something like that. Cause I think there was a movie by that name and she took that name and adapted that for all the wonderful men she's worked with and worked for over at the two Busch stadiums.
Fortunately for you, Bob, on Sunday night, you didn't have to call that painful walk-off home run that beat the Nationals. But unfortunately, you were on the call on Monday night. I want our listening audience to listen to this because we love what you did with it.
3-1 pitch to a guy with power.
All right, Bob, tell me the thinking there. I loved it, though.
You know what? I wasn't thinking about it, Frank. I've been down this road before. And by the way, some of our Nationals fans, somebody timed after I said 3-1 pitch to a guy with power, and of course DeJong, then you hear the crack of the bat and the fireworks. They timed me, and evidently I fell silent for 51 seconds. I didn't know it was that long, and I didn't think about it. It just seemed like the right thing to do because Busch Stadium was rocking. The fireworks are going off. The fans are going crazy. The Cardinals are jumping around. Our fans are shell-shocked. I'm shell-shocked to a certain extent, except after doing this for 35 years nearly, nothing really surprises me in the game anymore. I'll say this. Something surprised me. Nothing shocks me anymore. So I was surprised by that, but not shocked. But the way that game had gone, it was a crazy last couple of innings. Frank, I think the only other time I did something like that was in 1987. I was with the Texas Rangers, and we were at County Stadium in Milwaukee. The Milwaukee Brewers had won, if you guys remember this, had won their first 11 games of the season. It was Easter Sunday. County Stadium was full. The Rangers led 4-1 going into the bottom of the ninth. Rob Deer hit a three-run homer to tie the game off of Mitch Williams, one of our closers. Then we brought in Greg Harris, and Dale Swaim hit a two-run homer to walk off the Rangers, and they beat us 6-4. And as the ball disappeared into the right field bleachers, all I said was, for Milwaukee, 12 in a row. And I think I laid out for the better part of a minute because, again, the crowd, you know, the place going crazy. They'd won 12 in a row. It was Father's Day. It was a sellout. And it's interesting, Frank. Last year in Milwaukee, they had a 30-year reunion of that team that won its first 12 games. And I got interviewed by a couple of media outlets. And, you know, back then, teams didn't televise home games that much. So I think my call of that homer is the only TV call that exists for Dale Swaim's homer. And the Milwaukee media was very complimentary to me because they knew I wasn't happy about it. But I laid out and I let the moment play. And, you know, you can't do it on radio that much. I think Jack Buck was the master of that, and I would have to say that Jack's the biggest influence in my career. But on radio, you eventually have to start saying something about the players jumping up and down and mobbing their teammates. But on TV, Frank, you can let it play. And after that ball went out of the ballpark two nights ago, my mind immediately went back to April of 1987 in Milwaukee. So that's the second time I've had a situation like that.
So Bryce Harper, another great night at the ballpark. The average is not there, but the slugging and the home runs and the RBIs certainly are. Do you feel like you're broadcasting the last couple of months of Bryce Harper's Washington Nationals career?
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. I mean, Bryce says all the right things about Washington. He always says how much he's in love with the city. He and Kayla are, you know, that people see him around town. They're part of the fabric of the community. Bryce does a lot of charitable stuff that people don't know about. And, you know, he has his detractors. He plays hard. He's got a hot temper. He's controlling it a whole lot more now at the age of 25 and 26 than he did when he was a teenager coming to the big leagues. He's matured a lot. So I don't know what Bryce is going to do. I don't know what Scott Boras and Bryce's dad, Ron, I don't know what decisions are going to be made on that situation. If he doesn't come back to the Nats, you know, you figure it's probably going to be the Dodgers. The Phillies seem interested, and even the Cubs seem interested. We had bleacher fans in Chicago, you know, chanting to Bryce, "We want Bryce, we want Bryce." You know, and usually we go on the road, he gets booed by everybody, except here in St. Louis, for the fans are so classy, they don't boo anybody but Cubs, as far as I know. But I just think it's going to be one of those really interesting things. He appears to love D.C. I think the Nats are going to make him what they feel is a competitive offer, and the rest is up to Bryce Harper, Scott Boras, and the family. And, Frank, I have no idea. I have no feel for what's going to happen. But I am kind of, you know, I'm kind of looking around and smelling the coffee. You know, they say wake up and smell the coffee. I'm trying to, or smell the roses, as it were. I'm trying to appreciate every moment I get to see from Bryce because you never know if he might be in a different uniform next year.
Bob, you grew up in St. Louis watching Bob Gibson, and now you're broadcasting the equivalent of Bob Gibson in Max Scherzer.
Great call.
besides the raw numbers, and he's going to become the third pitcher, I think, in history to win three straight Cy Youngs and his fourth overall, I want you to give our listening audience, you know, something that's not statistical, but something about Max Scherzer that we don't know, that you have observed over the years.
Max Scherzer is our number one cheerleader in the dugout. But he's not just a rah-rah guy, Frank. He's talking to the other pitchers. He's talking to hitters. The guy's hitting almost 300. I'm really sad that he pitched Sunday night. We won't get to see him in this series at Busch Stadium because I know Max's folks would love to see him. And by the way, you brought up the Bob Gibson thing. You and I might have discussed this in recent years. Brad, who's Max's dad, South St. Louis guy, we've got to know each other a little bit, and Brad told me that his favorite player growing up was Bob Gibson. So obviously Brad has passed some of that along, or a lot of that along, to Max, who is the modern embodiment of what Bob Gibson was all about. He would beat you with his arm. He would beat you with his bat. He might steal a base. Max has done that. He doesn't like the opposing team, not a single guy on the team on the day he's pitching. He basically won't talk to him. You know, because you watch batting practice now, everything in the big leagues, lovey-dovey, and guys from different teams hugging in the outfield and singing kumbaya. And Max is not going to do that. And, you know, he's just the guy who's going to compete. Every second of every day that he's in uniform, he's doing something to help the Washington Nationals, whether it's talking to the young guys, the pitchers in the dugout. Max goes back, Frank, this is unbelievable. Max goes back into the cage at our ballpark and works on his hitting some nights while our team is hitting. But when we're pitching, he makes it back to the dugout. He wants the starting pitcher or the relievers to know that he's on the top step. He's supporting his guys. And he's the leader of our pitching staff. I think he's probably unofficial assistant pitching coach to Derek Lilliquist, like he was with Mike Maddux. And that's what Max Scherzer is all about. He is all in 24/7. And when he comes to the ballpark and puts that uniform on, not a minute gets wasted when he's not out there trying to help our team.
The other really gifted right-handed pitcher you have in your rotation, we have quite a few, but Steven Strasburg, I want to take you back to 2012. I think it was 159 innings, and there were 24 games remaining. When you look back, do you think that was one of the worst decisions that the Nationals ever made, or do you think that was the right move?
Well, at the time, you know, I thought it was the right move. I had to be convinced of it, and the guy that convinced me of it was our general manager, Mike Rizzo, because Steven was coming off Tommy John surgery. And, you know, he came up in 2010 and had to walk off the mound in Philadelphia one afternoon. And, you know, we didn't know it at the time, but he needed Tommy John surgery. It's easy to look back and second guess that. And, of course, that's the year the Nats won the division. They all but had Game 5 won against the Cardinals, up 6-0 at home before the Cardinals started pecking away. And, of course, then the Daniel Descalso and Pete Cosma base hits in the ninth inning broke the Nationals' hearts and that of our fans, and things didn't turn out that way. Would Strasburg have probably made a difference in that series? I think all of us with the Nats are kidding ourselves if we don't say, yes, he would have made a difference. But for the young man's health, the Nationals did what they thought was right at that time. And I remember a couple of weeks before the decision was made, or at least announced, Mike Rizzo called all of us, the two radio guys, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. He called Rob Dibble and I. We were in Arizona. We walked across the parking lot over to the coffee shop, and Mike told all of us what he was going to do. He said, I'm going to take a lot of heat over this. He said it might cost us in the short run, but in the long run, I want to do it for the young man's health because I don't want to have to look his parents in the eye 1 year from now and say we overworked your son the first year out of Tommy John surgery, and now he has a shoulder problem, and we're going to have to go cut on him again. So that was the decision that was made. And Frank, I personally know I can see why the Nationals did it, and that keeps me from giving you a black or white answer, yes or no. I think the area, there's a little gray area in there about that decision. And now, you know, having said that, Steven has been hurt several times. Now, this time it's his neck. Other times It's been other things other than his arm. I will say, for Mike Rizzo's benefit, Steven Strasburg's arm and his elbow have remained intact and operable since that decision. What it cost the ball club, we'll never know, because he never took the mound for those games, so we'll never know what the results might have been.
Boy, even if you do lose Bryce Harper, man, do you have some good-looking young talent in that organization and some on the Major League roster right now. That opposite field blast was insane the other night.
Well, I tell you, Juan Soto is an amazing kid. He's 19 years old, and, you know, Soto, yeah, hit that two-run homer that appeared to win the game for us on Monday night before everything went sideways in that game. Last night, he had an opposite field double his second time up, and then he walked. So he's hitting around 302, 303. His on-base percentage is around 424, 425 right now. 15 homers, 43 RBIs. I think right now it's between him and Ronald Acuna Jr., who hit a couple of home runs last night of the Braves, as far as who's going to be the National League Rookie of the Year. Soto is amazing. And we weren't even talking about him, Frank, during spring training, because we were talking about our number one outfield prospect, a right-handed hitting center fielder by the name of Victor Robles. He's back. He hurt his wrist diving for a ball in Syracuse in April. Had kind of not a major break, but a fracture in the wrist. He's back. He's playing at Triple-A. He will be a certainty to be a September call-up. And if Bryce Harper does not come back next year, we'll probably have either Robles or Michael A. Taylor in center field. Michael's our fourth outfielder right now, and he could probably be starting for 24 major league teams, maybe more than that. We'll have Soto in left, and then Adam Eaton, you know, who shares leadoff duties with the shortstop Trey Turner, in right field. So the future is bright for this team. Whether Bryce comes back or not, you're going to miss that big bat. There's no doubt about it. But we do have some really good kids on the way. I would like to see us have more good young pitching on the way, but we're not as pitching rich as some of the other teams are right now with the young guys. And I think the Nats tried to correct that in the June draft. I'll tell you, those kids, Robles and Soto, have a chance to be Kurt Flood and Lou Brock and play next to each other for a long number of years.
Wow.
I'm not exaggerating. These two kids can be that good. I don't know about Hall of Fame. You know, Soto probably won't be as good as Lou. But I'm telling you, this Robles kid, he could be Kurt Flood in center field.
Final thought for you. Stints with the Cardinals, 16 years with ESPN, now 12 with the Nationals. Baseball broadcasters sometimes do it into their 80s. What's your exit strategy? Do you think you could be doing this 15 years, 10 years from now?
Well, I think I could be, but I don't know that I'm allowed. I don't know that Mrs. C and I would want to do that. I've been away from home an awful lot for the 40 some years that I've been out of college and doing this. Frank, I turned 65 this past March. Feel great. I had PRPs done on both of my knees over the off season. I'm playing golf. I'm having fun. I'm feeling fantastic. I have an option year next year. They have to let me know October 31st whether they're bringing me back for my 14th year with the Nats next year. And then beyond that, we'll just kind of wait and see. I mean, they could tell me to go home tomorrow, and I'd hold my head high and feel like I had a really good career. Because how many guys dream of, you know, announcing in the major leagues? And I'm in my 35th year. So that, you know, they could tell me, you stink, we're sending you home tomorrow, and I'd be okay. It would hurt, but I feel okay with that. So I'm going to, take it a year, a couple of years at a time. I don't see myself as one of those guys in the booth at 75 or 80. And if I can make it to 40 years in the big leagues, which would be five more years after this, that would be pretty cool. But, I think I've achieved most of my career goals. And as you well know, the one big disappointment in my career is that it never did happen for me full time in St. Louis. I'm beyond that now. I got a great job in D.C. I've made lifelong friends up there, and we'll probably finish my career there. But I don't see me doing this 10 to 15 years from now.
Bob,
I want to be playing some golf and traveling and really enjoying my family. Hope to have some grandkids by then, and of course my sisters. They'll keep me entertained as well.
Very nice. Bob, great to hear your voice. I'll see you at the ballpark today. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Hey, Frank, thanks to you, and always a pleasure to be with you, and I'll see you at the yard.
All right, Bob Carpenter joining us, the television voice of the Washington Nationals. We'll take a short time out. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.